This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Prostate cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American men, with about one man in seven being diagnosed with the disease during his lifetime. Later in the show, we'll talk with a comedian who decided his sense of humor was one of his best weapons in his fight with prostate cancer. But first, here to discuss the causes and treatments for prostate cancer and the latest in available research are, with the University of Cincinnati Cancer Institute, Dr. Sadhana Verma, a UC Health radiologist, and Dr. Krish Gaitonde, a UC Health urologist. Both are also associate professors at the UC College of Medicine. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And you're both with UC Health, but you also have, both of you have a unique relationship in working with the VA. Krish, tell us about that.
So, both Sadhana and I, we are faculty and we are attending, physicians at the Cincinnati VA. The Cincinnati VA is affiliated with the University Hospital. And since today's program is about prostate cancer, there are some, you know, our VA here is, like a regional center, referral center for a lot of the cancer, specifically with urology. And we do a lot of, prostate cancer related, work. There are, as we go in the program, you know, some of the other things like we do targeted biopsies, newer diagnostics and, you know, robotics, all of that we are able to offer the veterans here. And, like, for example, the targeted biopsy, we are the only VA in the country doing it. So I think it's a great opportunity for us to be able to share the expertise across two institutions.
And Sadhana, your expertise is radiology, correct?
Yes. So, so we also offer the cutting edge prostate MRI at the VA hospital.
Okay. Now, Sadhana, prostate cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in men. Just how prevalent is this disease? Do we know the number of men who are suffering from prostate cancer in the United States?
Yeah, there are about over 240,000 new cases that are diagnosed annually and over 29,000 deaths annually in the U.S.
And it's probably millions of men who actually have the disease, isn't it?
That's correct. I think there are a lot, you know, that's kind of the numbers. You know, of course, this number kind of keeps changing, but there are millions of men at present who have the disease at the current time.
Are some men more likely to be diagnosed with prostate cancer than other men?
There are some high risk, high risk populations. For example, African American men are more at risk of having prostate cancer. Also, if you have any family history, that if you have a first degree relative, either a father or a brother, that almost sometimes up to doubles your risk. So I think these are the two high risk populations which we have to be a little more cognizant of.
And what age group does the disease most commonly affect?
So most commonly you'll see it in the 60s. At 65 approximately is where you'll see the most prevalence or most common population. It's very uncommon to have it below the age of 40, but I think it's around the 60-65 population is where you see the most common population.
And Sadhana, although it's not as common in younger men, if you're having symptoms, this is something that you shouldn't ignore, is it?
Absolutely, because the younger men are actually have the more aggressive form of cancer if they do have prostate cancer. And those are the ones we are trying to catch and trying to make sure they come into the system and get treated appropriately.
And also the other thing is that as we know, prostate cancer is a fairly slow growing disease. So the younger the person, the longer his natural lifespan. So if you pick somebody at 50, he's going to, you know, his lifespan is going to be another 30, 40 years. So it's these patients who probably will benefit the most from treatment. If it's an older patient at 70, probably the benefit of treatment is not going to be as much as if you pick somebody earlier.
And what are the symptoms of prostate cancer? Can you both talk about those?
I mean, one of the things about prostate cancer, it really does not cause symptoms in the early stage. And that's why, it's a little different from other cancers. Usually the symptoms of prostate cancer come in when the disease is advanced and when it goes to the bones or causes some obstruction. Now, in the early stages, it usually gets picked up by a test called as a PSA. There is a lot of debate on this test because, you know, we do end up picking a lot of cancers which might not necessarily affect the survival. But there are new technologies available today which can help us find out which are the patients who, even though get picked up early, would benefit from treatment. And that's the goal of the whole in the whole process today.
Now, some of the early warning signs, I've always heard the frequent urination, burning when you urinate, that kind of thing. Are those definitely warning signs that you should be paying attention to?
They're not necessarily related to prostate cancer. I mean, they are related to prostate enlargement. Now, there are two aspects to it. In men, you know, all men almost with age will get enlarging prostate. But this enlargement is non-cancerous. The cancerous enlargement or the cancer of the prostate doesn't specifically cause symptoms. What symptoms you get with frequency, urgency are related mainly to enlargement of the prostate, which is not necessarily cancerous.
Do we know what the causes of prostate cancer are? I mean, is it something we're still just not quite sure?
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot. I mean, there's no specific. I mean, a lot of this is, you know, there are a lot of studies being done to look at, is there in a genetic predisposition and, you know, in genetic changes. There are some genes which have been associated with high risk prostate cancer. There's been no real definite cause. There are other factors which, you know, which have looked at, environmental factors, diet, a lot of factors, but nothing that has been, concretely or definitely been attributed to as the factor which causes prostate cancer.
And you were talking about genetics. I've always heard that this is something you could inherit. If your father had it, if your grandfather had it, there's a greater likelihood that you'll have the disease?
Yes, absolutely. So the first degree relative is important. So father or brother, there is a higher risk for prostate cancer in those men.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And let's talk with Tom in Sims Township. Good afternoon, Tom. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome. What's your question or comment?
Well, I'm called the ambassador or moderator of the Prostate Cancer Information Group.
Oh, very good.
Probably the largest prostate cancer support group in the area, maybe in 3 or 4 states.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Tom. This is Chris Kitande.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Chris. Glad to hear your voices.
How important is it to get the message out there? I mean, that's your primary mission, isn't it? It's important that people are aware of this disease and to take it seriously, right?
That's correct. We have business cards printed that I pass out wherever I go, wedding reception, church on Sunday, banks. I don't care where I go, I pass them out.
I'm curious, since you're all three working in this area, is there a general reluctance among men to get tested for this or to admit that it's any kind of a problem they could face, Tom? Is that what you see as you go around talking to people about it?
I think men in general don't want to talk about health issues, especially when it gets in this area. And as I understand it, about half the men in America don't get annual physical to begin with, so I don't know how they would know they had prostate cancer.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think to add to that, you know, Tom's group does a great job, and we've actually gone there and, you know, spoken to his members. I think they do a great job in providing support to all these patients. And then that it's true that a lot of patients are reluctant to do it. And there's a lot of, you know, kind of, I won't say misinformation, but mixed information, which is out there, which sometimes also adds to the reluctance.
Tom, what about the support aspect of your group? That's very important for helping people deal with this disease, isn't it?
Well, I think what we do is pretty miraculous. We meet twice a month. We have all men's meeting at 7 o'clock on the second Wednesday, men only. And this typically, if a newly diagnosed guy comes, he can talk to 20 or 30 guys that have been through the experience on a personal basis, talk man to man. At the end of the month, we have an educational meeting when the women are invited, and then we have a professional speaker, and that's when the doctors here have spoken to our group. So that's very valuable. The unusual thing is we have a thing called private panel where our mail master, Jim Golan, if somebody emails him a question about prostate cancer, he emails it blind to 360 men on our email list that have been through the experience, and they can call or email the questioner and talk to him personally and answer their questions. It's just remarkable what happens with that.
Tom, here's your chance to get out your key message. What's your most compelling message to men about prostate cancer?
You have to know your PSA. The only way you can know your PSA is to get an annual blood test and get it measured.
Tom, thank you so much for calling in this afternoon. We really appreciate it. And we have the link for your support group on our website, WVXU.org. Thanks, Tom. PSA, what does PSA stand for?
So PSA basically is prostate-specific antigen, and that's a blood test which is released by the prostate cells. It's what it's the best test kind of available today to help us make a early diagnosis of prostate cancer. It's a routine blood test which is done. You know, you don't need to be fasting for it, and there are different levels which kind of trigger suspicions. I mean, the normal value is 4. Of course, there are some age specific values which are available, but the normal value is 4. And anything above 4 should kind of trigger further look at it. Of course, a lot of this is, there's a lot of debate, as I said earlier, about whether we should be doing this test. And I think the key word is shared decision making. That means, you know, when I get a patient, I talk to the patient about the pros and, you know, cons of doing this test and what it entails, if it's positive or negative. And today, with a lot of imaging technologies available, it has changed the way we look at this completely.
Right. So now we can see using our MRI that as Dr. Gatande was mentioning earlier, the patient symptoms are often related to urgency, et cetera, is because of enlargement of the central part of the gland, which is the transition zone. And that's, you can get very low percentage times cancer there, but majority of the cancer, 70% of the cancers occur in the outside part of the gland, which is the peripheral zone. And we can nicely see these two zones on MRI. And so, not only that, we can tell that if it's a very aggressive tumor or is it low grade. We still need a biopsy, but we are further along than we used to be, I would say, in the era when we were doing biopsies without any imaging technique available. Because an ultrasound, all the ultrasound is doing is to show you where the prostate gland is. The top part of the prostate, the middle part of the prostate, and the lower part. It's not showing the cancer. So the biopsies are done randomly in the gland without any knowledge of where the cancer, and I have to say, this is the only part of the body that we do this blindly in until now.
And it's amazing that, you know, blind biopsies have been the way that we've been using to diagnose prostate cancer. And when you mean blind, we just go in and sample the prostate. And statistically, you are only sampling approximately even as low as 1% of the prostate. Whereas the MRI, what happens is, we get an MRI for the patients. You're able to target the biopsy to the areas which you might normally miss with a random blind biopsy. And I think in this area, actually, at UC and at University Hospital and at the VA, we are the only two places offering this actually in the whole region. And I think this is just going to become the way to do it. I don't think there's any other way, because there is enough data. I mean, it's not actually, it's evidence-based now. There is enough data to show that this not only picks up targeted areas, but also picks up what is called as clinically significant disease. And I think it makes a huge difference in the management when we decide who to treat and who not to treat.
We'll continue our conversation about prostate cancer after the break, and you can join the discussion at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. My guests this afternoon are Dr. Sadhana Verma, a UC Health radiologist, and Dr. Krish Gaitande, a UC Health urologist, as we talk about the causes of and treatments for prostate cancer, as well as the latest research on the disease. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Krish, I guess after you get the PSA number back, there's going to be one of two things. You're either going to go, I'm relieved. Oh, thank goodness. Or you're going to go, uh-oh. What next when that number comes back high? What's typically the next step a doctor takes?
So normally, if the number comes high, we rule out certain other causes which can cause the PSA to go up, such as infection, which is a common cause. So once that's taken care of and we know that there is no other reason why the PSA is up, the next step is, and of course, once we confirm that is actually, you know, we repeat it to make sure it's actually high, then we go in and the next step is a biopsy. And that's where Dr. Verma's expertise comes in, where we usually at our practice, we suggest an MRI because that helps us target the next step.
Right. So then the patient would come in, the man comes and gets an MRI done, and we can tell if the gland is, the central part of the gland is enlarged, meaning that it's typical benign prostatic hyperplasia, hypertrophy that people get as men age, or is there a tumor there? So, and MRI is very good at detecting clinically significant disease, and that's the kind of disease we want to go and aggressively treat. The whole issue with PSA, as we were discussing earlier, came up was because a lot of men were being treated just based on PSA, and they may have had very clinically insignificant disease, meaning they had nothing, you don't really need to do anything. So now on an MRI, if I see no lesion and I see a very, very small area and we go biopsy that, and that's a very low grade cancer, we just follow those men. We don't do anything about it. We just follow them and they can come back and get their MRI the following year. They get clinical, you know, physical exam, they do PSA, et cetera. But we have a more, evidence-based knowledge now to go and do that as opposed to, you know, take out the prostate on every man that has small, low-grade disease.
I can see where this would have a lot of advantages, less invasive, more specific, and more reassuring to the patient ultimately.
Correct. And we have a technology. So once we have the MRI done, then we use a technology called as a fusion biopsy. And the fusion biopsy is actually like a GPS navigation system. There are, you know, there are a couple of them out there, but the one we use is a system which is made in California. It's called Artemis. And what that does, it fuses the MRI images with our ultrasound images. And it's like, it's so using this, then we can target the biopsy to this particular area. I think it's got a huge role also in patients who have had negative biopsies before. And that's one of the biggest dilemmas. People have negative biopsies and their PSA keeps on going up. And before the MRIs, the only solution was if you had 12 cores before, that means 12 pieces. Next time you have 24, then you do 36. You keep on increasing the cores. But studies have shown that that really doesn't, you know, other than the, you know, just making number of, it really doesn't enhances the diagnostic capability. With MRI, it's made a huge difference. If you look at the numbers, the chance of picking up a biopsy after a negative biopsy, chance of it being positive on a repeat biopsy is about, you know, first time it's about 35%. The next time it's 20%. It's 50. So it keeps on dropping. With MRI, it's about 35% consistently of clinically significant disease. I think that the key is clinically significant disease. And then based on that, if you find that it's clinically insignificant, then these patients can be put on active surveillance. That means we can keep an eye on them and we do not need to treat them.
Is that what I've heard the term watchful waiting used in reference to what you were talking about earlier about just if we know it's not progressed very far, we can just, at that point it ends and we can just keep an eye on you and make sure it doesn't go any farther than that.
Right. So that term is just changed to active surveillance because sometimes watchful waiting seems, you know, you
doesn't
just waiting.
Sound active enough.
Right, right. So.
And using active surveillance previously, the strategy was to repeat biopsies every, like, you know, if you had somebody on active surveillance, they would need a repeat biopsy at 1 year and 3 years. But with MRI now, we are sometimes able to just follow them up with imaging. And that's a huge, benefit because patients might not need a repeat biopsy, to have done again.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's talk with Tom in Mount Washington. Good afternoon, Tom. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hello. I just wanted to concur exactly what Dr. Verma and the other doctor was saying. I've gone through the process of the 3-Tesla MRI at the University of Cincinnati.
Hi, Tom.
How you doing, Verma? Dr. Verma?
Good. I'm glad you're on. Okay.
And I had diffused targeted biopsy, which just simply means that when you see something that looks suspicious on an MRI, you know exactly where to put the needles into and pull the samples out, as opposed to a blind biopsy, which used to be the standard, where 12 random needles were put in and a lot of things were missed. So in my case, there was some areas that were worse than others. And based on that, the radiation was targeted in those areas stronger. And also with the seed therapy, brachytherapy, also the same philosophy was used, stronger seeds in worse areas. And just wanted to say that UC is a fine facility, and this is state-of-the-art as far as the MRI and addressing the issue. And I also want to say about our CincinnatiProstate.com, PCIG. We welcome people who have been diagnosed or have questions or have family members. We got the 360-member panel board to consult with, and we have actual testimonies of people's journeys, and we can plan what type of action is best for them. Everybody is different, and you know, this is not a cookie cutter type of operation. Some people want to get it over with quick, and some people want to take a different route, and it depends on many factors.
Tom, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Tom.
Greg tweeted, at what age should a man get his first PSA test?
As far as the current, as per the current guidelines, which is a U.S. task force, actually, they have actually recommended against routine screening. But I think from the American Cancer Society and from the AUA guidelines, the most benefit comes from 55 to, 69. What in practice we usually recommended above the age of 50, I think getting a PSA is reasonable. If you have a high risk factor, that means if you are African American or if you have, if you have a first degree relative, which is a brother, father, then starting at 45 is what is routinely clinical practice. But like I said earlier, this is more of a shared decision making where you sit with the patient and explain to them what it entails if you have a high PSA. But I think these are the kind of age groups where you would recommend it.
Let's talk with Gil in Northern Kentucky. Good afternoon, Gil. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. What's your comment?
I've had two prostate biopsies, both of which were negative, and my father's had radical prostatectomy 20 years ago. He had prostate cancer, obviously. I'm curious if there's any dietary or lifestyle suggestions that could alleviate my risk for prostate cancer or chances of acquiring it.
Yeah, hi, Gil. This is Krish here. The question is: so, your biopsies have been were they regular biopsies or were they with MRI? Like any targeted biopsies?
They were both fusion biopsies down at UC.
Okay, both fusions. So I think if they've been negative, then from the diet perspective, there were studies done which were, which have looked at, selenium, vitamin E, lycopene, but there's not really any specific, and the studies did not, suggest any specific, recommendations. I mean, like I said, they've also looked at obesity and, so generally prostate health wise, lycopene, selenium, vitamin E, these are what people use. But like I said, the studies really haven't provided conclusive evidence.
Jim, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Let's talk with Robert in Batesville. Good afternoon, Robert. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. My question is more on treatment options. And I know there's the robotic removal or the radical removal, but I've also, I believe, read some things about proton therapy, I think, that you can get done at certain centers that does not involve the removal of the prostate. And I'd just like to know if you have any thoughts on that or if I'm talking about the right thing, I believe. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, proton beam therapy is a form of radiation therapy. I think radiation therapy is a very good option for prostate cancer. The advantage of proton beam, see, the whole goal of any of these therapies today is to try and target the treatment to the gland without targeting any surrounding organs. So I think with any of these newer radiation modalities, what you're trying to do is target the radiation to the prostate gland and avoid the complications that might arise from radiation scattering to the surrounding tissues. Proton beam is a good option. If you compare between surgery and radiation, the results are fairly comparable. Often, if you look towards as you go more towards like 15 years and plus, sometimes surgery, at that point, surgery has much more durable results. But I think up to about 15 years, 10 to 15 years, it's fairly similar. I mean, you have to weigh the side effect profile of both these treatments and then make a decision on what suits the disease as well as overall the outcomes.
Yeah, while this is a serious disease, a lot of men who are diagnosed with prostate cancer don't actually die from it, do they? And why is that?
Well, the whole thing is that's true, and that's why the whole debate about are we over-treating, and the answer is, to a certain extent, yes, if we don't make a decision about what exactly is a cancer you can not treat and which one you treat, and that's where all this technology we're talking about comes in. So if we make a diagnosis and we are able to figure out that a particular cancer is the one which we need to treat and B is not to be treated, then we can direct the treatment. Most men will outlive the disease, and that is very true. The most men will outlive it. It's slow growing, and you know, and a lot of men will die of other natural causes other than from the cancer.
And next month there is an event to raise awareness about prostate cancer, and I think it involves facial hair, does it not?
Yeah. So it's called as Movember, and Movember is basically every year that's men's health, and I think that's absolutely right. And that's last year UC had a big mustache put on their building, but I think that's just to bring awareness about prostate cancer. So
and thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It. From the University of Cincinnati Cancer Institute, Dr. Sadnam Verma, a UC Health radiologist, and Dr. Krish Gaitonde, a UC Health urologist. After the break, a stand-up comedian's battle with prostate cancer at the young age of 44 and how his sense of humor helped him through it. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.